targets. Avoiding the puddles of molten glass around the wheels, she climbed the side of the ore truck's cab. As Jack reached the top of the tank, the steam billowing up from its ruptured belly partially hid him from the enemy. Standing on the side of the corkscrewed ladder, Jack raised himself up, shouldered his pulse rifle, and sent a green beam across the compound. He didn't aim at the kneeling black figures. He aimed instead at the glass beneath and around them. He only got off a short blast of energy before the answering fire ripped back at him. He ducked as a fountain of sparks erupted from the shoulder of the tank and a stunning wall of heat hit him. By then, Mildred was on the roof of the WAG, firing at the battle-suited invaders, and drawing fire in return. As soon as the energy blasts from the flatland shifted her way, Jack popped up again and poured more green light onto the glass. It didn't take much to soften the material. A few seconds, and the surface turned wet and shiny. As the five troopers began to shift their aim points again, chunks of glass started arcing down onto them. The slaves had picked up the fight, which made the troopers shift their aim points yet again. There were too many threats to deal with at once. While the troopers were trying to keep Doc and Dean's cohorts from stoning them to death, Jack and Mildred's laser beams turned the glass under their boots to gel. Whether they could sense the heat through their battlesuits or not, the troopers didn't move. It was a mistake. The entire section of glass, which was a continuation of the already partially collapsed roof of the tunnel, caved in on itself, dropping four of the five troopers 25 feet to the mine floor. The fifth trooper sank to his armpits in a much smaller hole in the glass, but stopped himself from falling through by extending his arms. To do this, he had to drop his weapon. Another mistake. Before he could drag himself out of the hole, the molten glass cooled and re-solidified around him, sealing him in place like a cork in a bottle. By the time Mildred and Jack jumped from their shooting platforms and crossed the compound, the slaves had closed in on the hapless soldier. They'd taken off the guy's helmet and were using his head as a punching bag. Because he couldn't twist or turn, he couldn't use his arms to block or defend himself from blows from behind. He couldn't fall over either because the battle suit was holding him up, a stationary target. Jack stepped to the larger hole he and Mildred had cut and looked over the edge. The other invaders lay on the ground below. It was impossible to tell whether they'd broken limbs as a result of the fall, or whether the melted glass had hardened. Either way, they weren't getting up under their own power. Some slaves started tumbling big glass blocks on top of them.
Hey, stop that! We got a better idea. Come on!
Most of the slaves rushed down to the ruined mine entrance and swarmed onto the fallen troopers. They took away their weapons, then removed their helmets so their heads could be summarily bashed in. The slaves used the butts of the captured pulse rifles, as well as chunks of rock, to accomplish these feats.
Oh well. Not like they don't deserve it, fucking cold hearts.
When it was over, Jack walked over to the water tank.
Everyone with laser rifle, come! Seal up mine entrance! Nobody down there, ever again!
They formed into a firing line. The crisscrossing green beams collapsed the entrances, turning them into waterfalls of molten glass, which buried the battered remains of the troopers.
Everybody in back truck! Take wounded!
The slaves did a dimple-by-dimple search. They carried the injured to the truck. Only about 50 were left alive. Mildred, Dean, Doc, and Jack piled into the bench seat of the Orwag's cab. The front and side windshields were blacked out. There was a dashboard, but no driver controls. No features at all except for a series of buttons arranged in a geometric shape. The only light came from a red bulb in the middle of the headliner.
Maybe this thing has to be driven from a battle suit. That plug there could be some kind of coupling.
May I suggest that you try that red button in the center, dear colleague? Red usually indicates something important.
Okay.
Instantly, the WAG's nuke-fueled turbine howled to life. And as that happened, a compartment opened in front of Mildred's seat, and a joystick popped out.
That's great, but we're still driving blind. Looks like the inside of a steel-belted radio in here.
Maybe you should move the stick a little.
Sure, why the hell not?
Mildred reached for it. As soon as her fingers closed on the knurled plastisteel lever, the windshields cleared. She figured the rest out in a hurry. The button on top was the engine speed control. Push the stick left or right for steering. Pull it back for reverse. Push the stick straight forward for brakes.
We're out of here.
With a jolt, she pulled away from the ruin of Ground Zero.
Well, the peanut gallery seems happy.
Do you blame them? You're their great emancipator.
Hell, being those fools free themselves.
Back across the river Styx. Back to the world of the living. The miracle of resurrection. We who are about to be reborn salute you, dear fairy person.
Doc, will you please shut up with your damned Greek myth? There were other ancient civilizations, you know. At least give me something Chinese.
I am no Orientalist.
Jesus, Doc.
Even though Mildred had the whole road to herself, it wasn't easy. With the glare from all the glass, it was difficult to pick out the shoulders. She showed a definite tendency to bounce off one side of the road and veer to the other, a case of overcompensation multiplied. Before things got completely out of control, she had to take her thumb off the speed button and let the uphill grade slow the wag. The consequences of any error on her part would have been grave. If the wag left the road proper, it would cost everyone on board their hands and feet, not to mention the whirlpools of frozen glass that loomed just off the shoulders. These whirlpools were 50 yards across, with spiraling black centers that dropped thousands of feet into emptiness. If she tipped over into one of those great slick funnels, it would have meant a much more complete disaster, the kind no one survived. As she rounded the edge of a particularly scary pinwheel, she and the others saw something stopped on the road dead ahead. Something big and black.
It's another ore wag!
Why, pray tell, is it stopped like that, you suppose?
Maybe wait. Block road so we not get past.
I don't see anybody around it.
Maybe ambush.
A pencil-thin green beam squealed over the wasteland, hitting the wag's cargo box. The slaves back there started yelling their heads off. A second beam from the other side of the road zeroed in on them. One of the shooters was firing from behind a jumbled row of 10-foot-high glass spikes. The other lay atop a small knoll above a gigantic whirlpool. Triangulated fire.
They've got us pinned down!
Some of the slaves in the cargo box attempted to return fire. To do that, they had to stick their heads up. Two of the captured rifles fell from the top of the box, followed by arms and heads of the men who tried to use them.
They want to hold us here until reinforcements arrive.
They happen to be doing an excellent job of it, too.
Not let do that.
It's going to be tough taking them out, Jack. We can't leave the road because of the manacles. We can't go forward because of the other wag. And they've got the high ground.
Why didn't they just cut the road if they wanted to trap us? Wouldn't that have been the easiest thing?
I think Dean has something there. All their shots have been at the top of the cargo box. They don't want to risk melting the road. Especially not here where it slides off so steeply. They want to keep the road to the mine open. We can use that.
And how exactly is that, madam?
It means they're not going to fire at the wheels.
Hide behind wheels.
And fire as I creep this wag forward. When they see that I intend to push their truck off the frigging road, you and Doc might get clear shots.
What about me?
I'm holding you in reserve, Dean.
Why me?
In case I need you when we get to the other wag.
Oh, all right.
Move fast, Doc. Under wag, quick.
I understand the strategy, dear lad. Lead the way.
Jack popped open the passenger side door and hit the road running. He took 5 steps, then dove beneath the undercarriage, thrusting the laser rifle out in front of him. Doc followed a second later.
Mildred Wright, do no fire. Not want to hit road.
Insightful young lass, our Dr. Wyeth. I shall take the left side, if you do not mind, Mr. Lauren.
Jack nodded and moved to the inside of the opposite wheel. With Mildred at the controls, the wag began to inch forward on its 7-foot-wide tires. Jack and Doc watched their targets, holding their fire. They crawled along with the wag, keeping hidden behind the wheels. The shooters angled downward fire without changing their positions, zapping the sides of the cargo box again and again, but they could only do so up to a point. Once the rebel ore wag had moved far enough up the road, their only target was the wag's rear gate. As the slaves were now staying well down, out of their line of fire, hitting the gate served no purpose. When Mildred was within 30 feet of the other wag, their intentions were obvious, as were the shortcomings of the trooper's ambush plan.
Mine's moving.
Doc swung the alien weapon to his shoulder and lined up the sights. The trooper on top of the knoll scrambled to his feet and started running downhill. Doc led him and squeezed the trigger. The resulting hum surprised him, as did the lack of any recoil.
Quite impressive.
His first shot went low and wide. Pinning the trigger, he painted the slope with a laser beam. Doc's blast cut the glass out from under the man's feet. He lost his balance and slid face first, leaving his rifle behind. The old man watched over his sights as the trooper tried to slow or stop himself by by putting out both gauntleted hands, palms forward, and digging in the toes of his boots. But the incline was too steep, and the glass was too slick.